'cause that'll be the day when I die.
The Brian D. O'Leary Show, episode 95. Remembering Buddy Holly and Friends. The Brian D. O'Leary Show, your home for serious content amidst an unserious culture. Brian D. O'Leary Show, Brian O'Leary here. It is, as I record, morning of February the 3rd, 2024, and it's the anniversary of the plane crash that took the lives of Buddy Holly, J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens, and a few others in Iowa. 1959. Sad day, because I enjoy all that music still to this day, and we wrote about it and talked about it last year. But the first thing that comes to mind, or comes up, anyway, on a day like this is, or leading up to it even, is this Don McLean song, American Pie, which if you've been listening to me or reading me or known me for any amount of time, I think that song is terrible. I dislike Don McLean with a white hot passion. I think he's a creep. In fact, I know he's a creep. We've talked about it in the past. Interesting thing about this whole thing, Don McLean's still alive and in his late 70s, early 80s, I guess, but all the other folks, for the most part, I think are gone, except Dion DiMucci, who continued on the tour. He wasn't a star then, but he continued on the tour. Frankie Avalon, I think, filled in. I think he's probably still alive. He's a star, but he was not on the original tour. Waylon Jennings has since passed, 2 decades plus now, I think. So I'm a huge fan of Waylon Jennings, is kind of why this whole day is important to me, or rings as a bit of significance. Plus, you know, it's in the cultural zeitgeist always, still this day, rock and roll being a huge part of American society at one point. I don't know that it is anymore. Anyway. That's for another time. However, there's just a few things about that thing that make it even more important. I've written about it in the past, tried to tie these things together, but interestingly, if you know anything about the Buddy Holly story, Waylon Jennings played in his band. He wasn't part of the Crickets, but he was part of the backing band there in the Winter Dance Party, and which was a crazy tour to begin with. So some background on the plane crash. As far as I know, the tour crisscrossed its way across the Midwest this time of year in a horrible, horrible winter when snow, blizzards, ice, all this stuff. And it was, they'd go up to like 400 miles a night and, you know, cross back. It was just a poorly organized tour, right? And I think what happened was the guys were exhausted. They're taking rickety buses and this, that, and the other. And Buddy Holly wanted to get to the next location soon after the previous show. And so he had booked, chartered a plane just for the guys in his band, and Waylon was in his band. But Big Bopper was sick, and you know, he was the other headliner, and as was Valens, 17-year-old Richie Valens. And one of the other band members lost a coin flip to Valens to get on the plane, ultimately, because they were the three main stars. Band member fortunately lost, but Waylon voluntarily gave up his seat to the Big Bopper on the plane. Anyway, but the thing was, it was Buddy Holly was going to go ahead. This is such a, like, seemed like a good guy. He was going to go ahead, take everybody's laundry, do all the whole crowd's laundry, and have everything ready by the time these guys got to the next stop. But it ultimately never happened. And it is as the, it, it was not the day the music died. It was the day rock and roll became more important, perhaps. So I think this whole Don McLean thing, which is, gosh, I mean, really, it's a terrible song. And I have to say, a couple days ago on Twitter, there was some song that came up in, or some thread that, whatever, post came up in my thread. I didn't even subscribe to the person or whatever, but it was claiming the merits of this Don McLean song, American Pie, and how good it was. I mean, it's an 8.5 minute single that just is just, I mean, ugh. Sorry if you like it, but you'll learn to hate it if the more you know me. But anyway, all the people, all the responses were like, oh, it's such a great song. I forgot about it. And oh, it reminds me of that day. And, you know, it's such a good song. And one guy that I saw said, am I wrong to actually hate this song? And he said a couple other things. And I don't know who this guy was, but I was like, yeah, because it's an objectively, some sort of euphemism song with an adverb. Objectively, horrible, terrible song. Next day, I got at least a couple likes on that tweet, or the response to the tweet. And I was like, what did I respond to exactly? And it turns out the guy who wrote the original song original tweet praising American Pie and blocked me. I don't even remember the guy's name. So you should be honest. And it wasn't even an offensive tweet. I mean, whatever. Anyway, so stand your ground there on Twitter and say things that are true. X Twitter, whatever it is, the weird X character. I don't even know how you call it, but it's twitter.com or x.com, I guess. But BrianD'O'Leary.com is where you can go, but at Brian D. O'Leary there on Twitter, too. We're building a following. We're not huge yet, but we're building. Anyway, so 1959, Winter Dance Party, sad day. And I've written about this a little bit, and why, and all this stuff ties together. And it's this project I'm working on, and the project actually is way bigger than I originally intended. So I'm having to figure out how to trim this. But one of the pieces I wrote is why the Beatles owe their success to the Comanche Indians. It sounds like an odd connection at first, but it has to do with them being Buddy Holly fans. And Buddy Holly and his buddies in the Crickets, they one day in Lubbock, Texas, which is in the heart of Comanche territory, they went to see a movie at the theater called The Searchers, John Wayne flick, very good movie, wonderful cinematography. And it's a John Wayne in John Wayne role. But one of his famous lines will be, that'll be the day. So Buddy Holly and his buddies, they go and record this song with That'll Be the Day as the main catchy lyric. They record it. Doesn't go so well. They wait, I think it's like a year or something. They record it again, and then it's a hit. Well, these lads over in Great Britain, the Beatles, become huge fans of this, or I don't know if they were the Beatles at the time. They may have been the Quarrymen, but either way, they become huge fans of not only this Buddy Holly song and Buddy Holly's canon, but the whole style of rock and roll that Buddy Holly and essentially the progenitor of, him and Elvis Presley and a few others, Bill Haley and the Comets. So this whole style of rock and roll, which I call rock and roll 1.0. I haven't quite fleshed it out, but we'll say rock and roll 1.0. We talk about rock and roll and what it means and like what today or say 20 years ago counted as rock and roll. I mean, it's such a broad topic or broad label, but either way, I don't want to nitpick over it. But anyway, you can really call this era really, truly rock and roll. Beatles were big fans. They, as we all know, become huge stars, and their bass, if not kind of skiffle, was then they kind of leaned into this American rock and roll, kind of particularly Southern and Western type of rock and roll, Western being like Texas, as opposed to California. But they did ultimately were influenced by the Beach Boys, which would be like the Western, really Western, westernized, you know, as far as geography goes, rock and roll. And they tried, you know, there was some sort of competition there in the mid to late 60s between the Beatles and the Beach Boys. But really what got them going in the late 50s, early 60s was the Buddy Holly sound. And so anyway, and then I have always been, my entire life, a huge Waylon Jennings fan, going back from the days of when he was the balladeer on the TV show The Dukes of Hazzard, and he made one or two appearances as himself, but, you know, he's cool, man, and Buddy Holly was cool, and all these people are cool, and that's what I really like, you know, and if you don't like their music, you can appreciate them as people, and that's a really neat thing there. Another thing, and I wrote it as far as we'll get to it. So I've read Waylon's autobiography a few times, and so this is how this whole these people, the Buddy Holly and that whole crowd, and why this is so important, because it splinters off in a main way. So, you know, my entry point, as I said, Waylon Jennings. So Waylon, let's just get a little background. So Waylon was a DJ in the late 50s in Lubbock, Texas, and he eventually became a protege. So he was a teenage disc jockey, but he became a musical protege of Buddy Holly. And Waylon cut a song called Jolie Blonde, which is like gibberish Cajun, gibberish French, essentially. And that single, the original one, was recorded and produced by Buddy Holly himself. And so, but they became buddies and, you know, friends. And Waylon eventually became part of Buddy Holly's band, and he played bass with the band after the Crickets broke up, and that was 1958. So, and then I think late in 58, Buddy Holly, after that breakup of the Crickets, the local band from Lubbock, Texas, that with his friends, and he relocated to New York City with his wife. And Waylon visited Buddy Holly early in 1959, right before this Winter Dance Party tour kicked off. And then Waylon caught a train to Chicago to meet up with the, or maybe both of them did. I'm not sure the exact story. Buddy might have flown. He had a little more money. So anyway, they caught a train to Chicago to meet up with the rest of the tour. And then in New York, Buddy Holly told Waylon that he was planning to get the band back together. That means the Crickets and plus Waylon. Waylon, he saw as a star. He was just a bass player that day. And then they were going to go to England and tour after the package show in the Midwest got over with. Probably, I think it was scheduled to get over with. Well, it did. It did continue on. We'll get to that in a moment here. But in March, I think. So there's another fellow that played bass in the Crickets, and Waylon was kind of wondering where that left him. Then he'd go into England, some young Texan in England, not having a real position. And Buddy Holly told Waylon that he shouldn't worry, that Waylon was going to be the solo opening act for this reconstituted Crickets on their tour of England. But alas, there was no tour of England, and the Beatles, who, you know, any one of them may have seen one of these shows had they gone there, they never got to see their idol in the, ever. And then, so this Winter Dance Party, it was 24 cities in the Midwest over 24 days, no off days, like I said, crisscross in the upper Midwest, 400-mile overnight jaunts, all sub-freezing temperatures, fairly commonplace for this entire tour. And there, maybe in the show notes for this, we'll, if I can find it again, I will put the map. It's just nuts. The map that, or if you look at the map and what they did, it was nuts. So the tour booking operation, there's a historian that wrote about Buddy Holly. He said they didn't care. So, like I said about the being nuts, he said they didn't care. It was like they threw darts at a map. The tour from hell, that's just what they named it, and it's not a bad name. So on the night of February 2nd, so what would that be? Jeez, gosh, 65 years ago last night as I'm recording this. So the show in Clear Lake, Iowa ended. Tour was supposed to go, again, 400 miles to Moorhead, Minnesota. This is like the northwest of, 400 miles northwest of Clear Lake, Iowa. So Buddy, like I said, chartered the plane for his band, and he wanted to get some rest, get a head start on the day, and a bunch of laundry for everybody. And it was the headliners that flew. Waylon, honestly, he said that he felt more comfortable on the tour bus. You get more space. I mean, granted, it's cold, or and the heater, I think, maybe didn't work or something at one point, and so, but whatever. I mean, he was magnanimous in that. But so, and there was a bunch more upcoming people that would be stars on this tour, but either way, and Waylon Jennings and being one of them. So 5 miles northwest of Mason City, Iowa, in the early morning of February 3rd, the plane went down in a blizzard shortly after takeoff. But as I said, the tour did play on, and they wouldn't even let these guys go to the funerals, the guys that remained on the tour. They were under contract, and they were the venue managers would occasionally threaten non-payment because the original headliners didn't appear. They didn't care that these guys were dead. But so Waylon Jennings, the through line of this whole thing, it took him about after the tour ended, so in 59, it took him almost a decade to reappear as a musician in the public consciousness once again. And he did. And then in the early 70s and, you know, up to the end of his life, he was a stud. And, you know, 20 years after this fact, he was starring in, or as a balladeer in the Dukes of Hazzard aforementioned. And like I said, that music did not die that day. It just continued and maybe got better. I'm sad that we lost these folks, but they had two more weeks of this tour. And Dion and the Belmonts were on the tour also, if you probably heard of Dion and the Belmonts. And Dion DiMucci, like I said, last original headliner, still alive. And I think he's around 83 years old as I speak, but I believe he's alive still. But, and then there's a fellow named Bobby V, who people in the boomer age may know a little more, but he was 15 years old at that time. And he was a Buddy Holly impersonator, kind of. But he had a Buddy Holly's act down cold at age 15. I think he was from Minnesota. And so he filled in on February 3rd, the next day, filled in for Buddy Holly as a headliner. And then there was Jimmy Clanton, who folks of a certain age would certainly know. Frankie Avalon, of course. Maybe people of my age might know him only as the father in Back to the Beach, a classic mid-80s movie. And then there was Fabian. He was also on tour. And these three were the ones who subbed in and finished the tour in place of the three deceased stars. But two nights before, this is crazy how this all works. Two nights before the Clear Lake show on January 31st, 1959, there was a 17-year-old who showed up in Duluth, Minnesota to this winter dance party. And ultimately, he would play in Bobby V's backup band. And he had under this assumed name. His name was Elston Gunn. So stop me if you've ever heard of this guy before. If you've listened to me or been with me for a while, you might know where I'm going with this. Elston Gunn. He said, I went to see Buddy Holly. This is Elston Gunn talking. I went to see Buddy Holly play at Duluth National Guard Armory, and I was there 3 feet away from him, and he looked at me. I just have some sort of feeling that he was with us all the time, and we were making this record in some kind of way. And this is what this man said 40 years later at age 57 in his acceptance speech for the 1998 Grammy Award for Album of the Year. So Bobby V said of this former bandmate, Elston Gunn, who was a piano player in the band and clapped for a few shows only. Bobby V said of Elston Gunn, he said he played pretty good in the key of C. Elston Gunn, real name, Robert Allen Zimmerman. There's some Zimmerman. My grandmother's last name was Zimmerman, actually. So I have some Zimmerman blood. But not Minnesota Zimmermans. The Zimmerman, 1998 Grammy Award Album of the Year winner, changed his name again. And that was about the time he decided to drop out of the University of Minnesota. And after he got really into reading Dylan Thomas poetry, so the new name stuck. And it was Bob Dylan. We all know him. Also, so there are people who saw the tour that are still alive. I think he's a little older than a boomer, but Bob Dylan. So interesting. You know, Dylan, and he crosses all sorts of genres too. It's amazing what Buddy Holly did. And it's not just, and it's what really bothers me this day, this February 3rd, about just constantly recalling this American Pie song, which came out in the early 70s, which it's just terrible. And it's too bad that, that becomes the legacy. So I want to change the legacy, I guess. I buried the lead big time, 20 minutes in or whatever it might be, 25 minutes in. Buried the lead. I want to change the legacy of this day and erase Don McLean from history as much as we can and start talking about the important things of rock and roll, not schmaltzy folk music. So, I mean, this is on a personal level, like just not liking Don McLean's music, but like just a little biographical information. He's a creep. So after he divorces second wife, who he'd been married to for nearly 30 years, there was accusations, allegedly, of abuse that were hanging over him. When he was 70, or I think he's 78 years old now, so if I do the math right. He took up with this, with a model, quote model, and reality star who was nearly 50 years younger than him, 48 years younger than him. So maybe like 29, something like that at the time. I don't know if he's still with this gal or what, but he is still living off the reputation of that crappy song. Unfortunately, I did at one point purchased some Don McLean music because there was actually a Jim Croce song I wanted to hear. I couldn't find it on any other CD. It was a CD that had half Don McLean songs and half Jim Croce songs. Jim Croce is a way, way better. I love Jim Croce. I've written about him in the past. And tragically, a few years into his own career, Jim Croce died in a plane crash. All the good ones seem to, but that's very sad. So anyway, yeah. And then I've also written, you know, I used to like Garth Brooks a decent amount, late 80s, early 90s. But, you know, Garth Brooks counts as one of his musical heroes, literally, like heroes in music, as Don McLean. I just can't cotton that. And I just, yeah, I mean, Garth Brooks is what he is. But he was a star in the 90s and a good one, but ultimately the staying power is, it's hard to listen to a lot of his music. There's a few songs in, you know, some of his more famous songs actually are the ones I don't like the most, but, so that's an indictment on the character. And, well, he was awful during the whole Corona mania too. And so that turned me off, but I did, when was that? It's a Thanksgiving weekend after one of the football games. I think that was on, Amazon. There was a Garth Brooks concert that was live from, I think, a bar he opened in Nashville. And, it was bad. It was kind of fun to see Garth Brooks and stuff, but it was bad. He did not sound good. His wife, I think, Trisha Yearwood now, was not very good either. She stepped in, and it was kind of sad to see. It was all nostalgia and stuff, but, I mean, you can say the same thing about the aforementioned Bob Dylan. You know, he's not as great as he once, but God, guy's in his late 80s now, I think, mid-80s. And, anyway, that might be enough, of me pontificating on this day, but again, the legacy that we want to leave is of these great stars, these great rock and roll stars. I wouldn't necessarily say great musicians. I'm not going to attest to their musicianship, but I will attest to their stardom. And we need to keep these memories of these folks alive, Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Ritchie Valens, and everybody within their wake, with the exception of Don McLean. We need to, you know, jettison him to the dustbins of history. That is my call for the day. But thanks for indulging me today. I'll be back with you hopefully sooner than later, but I want to get that off my chest for today. So that'll be the day. For more of our podcasts, head on over to briandoleary.com. And while you're over there, sign up for our email list. We'll send you daily emails. You can also find the link for our Substack page and various other resource pages we have. And that's at briandoleary.com. Thinking about starting that new podcast of yours? Having trouble figuring out how to do it, perhaps? Never fear. We were in that same spot a few years back. At O'Leary & Company, we don't have all of it licked. But we've gone through the struggles of setting up those podcasts and those side gigs so that you don't have to. And you can go to O'LearyandCompany.com for more details. That's O'LearyandCompany.com.